And so today we are going to talk about David Hawkins' book, Power Versus Force, which provided me with a real expansion of consciousness when I first ran into it. I think it might have been something like 15 years ago. But before I get to that, I want to talk a little bit about where I was in consciousness before I found Power Versus Force and why it was such an expansion for me to see this particular book and to read what he had to say. In the time period in the late 1990s, around 2000, I had a vision in a meditation that was being done in a foundational class workshop in Science of Mind. And in the meditation, they suggest that you see yourself as a statue that a inspired sculptor has created. And I had done that workshop so many times, 7 or 8 times, and I'd done that meditation every time I'd done the workshop. And what I discovered is that over time, what I saw was less and less human and more symbolic. And so this particular time, the meditation said, see yourself as this sculpture. And when I pulled the cover off the statue, it was a mirrored box, a silver mirrored box with mirrors on all of the sides with a big purple bow on the top. And I thought, well, that's interesting. May I am the gift. What's the message here? And then it says in the meditation, become the statue. First you look at it, and then you go to the inside. And what happened next was fascinating, because people started walking into the room and seeing themselves in the mirrors. And they were like funhouse mirrors. They didn't see themselves clearly. They saw like a distorted vision of who they were, and they thought it was me, which was fascinating. It's like other people are seeing me through their filter. They're seeing themselves in me through their filter. It was a fascinating concept, and one that I'd never encountered, as far as I remember, before or since. But I just loved what I was seeing. And I found it really interesting to be on the inside and see these people come in and see how they looked. And so then what happened is that the suggestion in the meditation said a master walks in and you get to engage with the master as the statue. And who walked in was Mary Magdalene, and she was gorgeous. She looked like Elizabeth Taylor when she was 18 years old, and she had these big purple eyes and national velvet, and she was so beautiful. And Mary Magdalene looked in my mirror, and she looked beautiful. She looked radiant, even better than herself. And she just showed her light through my reflection. And so I got to talk to her, and I said, okay, I want to see everyone the way I see you. How can I do that? What can I do? And she just smiled at me, and she said, consciously choose to see through a filter of grace rather than a filter of fear. And I was blown away. I thought, okay, what's the difference between a filter of grace and a filter of fear? And that was the end of the vision. And I was left with a lot to contemplate through that that experience. And I just was excited that all of a sudden I had a choice. I could choose a filter of grace or a filter of fear. And 3 weeks ago, the last study group meeting, Jen Fay talked about having a choice of perception, that we could consciously choose to see things differently, look at things from a broader perspective, make a decision about having a new idea about what we were seeing or how we were seeing it. And when she talked about that, I thought, that's a really incredible suggestion, but when you think about it, when you most want to do that is when you're least able to do that. And so what tools do we have to make a different decision, to see things from a different point of view? And so I was immediately brought to the idea of talking about David Hawkins' map of human consciousness and the way it gives us not just the two choices I had in my vision, a filter of grace or a filter of fear, but a dozen choices at various levels of consciousness to see the world through fear or shame or acceptance or unconditional love or joy or oneness, all of these options of how to see the world. And so that's what I'm going to talk about. As we move on in this talk, it's always nice to have a quote from Ernest Holmes, and Ernest Holmes loved to quote Ralph Waldo Emerson, so I'm going to quote them both, Holmes quoting Emerson. He said, "In turning to the law, realize that it is a law of reflection. Life is the mirror of king and slave. If you want a friend, be a friend." And then Holmes went on to say, "As life is a mirror reflecting to us as conditions, the images of our thinking, whatever one thinks tends to take form and become a part of your experience." And so we want to make choices about what we think. And I don't know about you, but I wasn't raised to think I had much of a choice about what I thought. I was taught that this is the way you're supposed to think, and you better think that way, and if you don't, you're going to have something really terrible happen to you, like going to hell or whatever. So that giving permission to think differently, to rethink what's happening in life, that feels incredibly liberating to me. And so I always love it when I'm getting ready to do a talk and I get lots of messages that come to me, and one of them was the tut note from the universe from Mike Dooley yesterday that said, "Wondering how else you could view life when you're experiencing emotional pain is a sign of spiritual maturity." So you can choose a filter of grace or a filter of fear. But then Tut said, "Wondering how else you could view life when things are already going really well is the sign of a spiritual rock star." So we're all going to work on being spiritual rock stars today. And we're going to look at the map of human consciousness from Power versus Force. And I would like you to turn to the side of the handout I gave you that looks like this. And I apologize for using paper that kind of bled through. There was scale on the left. There was a lot more ink going on the paper that I'm usually dealing with. And it does bleed through a little bit, so I apologize for that. The first thing I want to say is that one of the most potent phrases I ever heard in my life came from a friend of mine named Laurie Cohen-Peters, who said, "Love is flawless and flows at every frequency." And so as we look at the map of human consciousness in front of us that deals with all the frequencies from shame to fear to anger to neutrality to acceptance to love and reason and peace and oneness, it's all love. There is nowhere love is not. So when you think of the way people express and experience life, they're all doing their best with what they have. No one can give you what they don't have. So what the love expressing in their life is simply an expression of the way they've lived, the way they've experienced life, the way life has showed up for them. And so when you start out looking at everything under 200 on this version of the map of human consciousness is the negative emotion-based stuff, and it's where you are in conflict of mind, heart, and body. And what it creates in your body is a catabolic state, which is destructive of health. It creates an adrenaline-based metabolism, and you are in either flight or fight mode. And the first rule that you live by is run if you're in shame, grief, or fear. And the second rule you live by is eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth if you're in anger. And revenge comes up in there too. So these are the negative emotion states of human consciousness, and they're destructive. People tend to harm themselves and others at these states of consciousness. But remember, it's still love flowing flawlessly at that frequency. So even though these are all low frequencies, and you have the suicide bombers who say when it doesn't go off and they arrest them and say, "Why did you do that?" They say, "Because they killed my friend. And I didn't want to live anymore, and I wanted to get back at those who killed my friend." So it's an expression of love in a way that perhaps we can't understand, but it's still an expression of love. When you hit 200, it changes the way the physiology of the body works. And 200 is courage. That's when you have the guts to question everything you've lived by up until then. That's when you say, maybe it's all right for me to choose how I think. Maybe it's all right for me to expand the way I see the world. And so what happens when you get above 200 and you move from courage to neutrality, which means non-judgment, which means saying, okay, it's not right or wrong. There is another way to see this. And then you get to willingness. I'm willing to be open. And Hawkins says willingness is the gateway to spiritual experience. And all of a sudden, the physical body shifts. When you get into this place, it goes to a neutral-based metabolism instead of an adrenaline-based metabolism. And there is a bodily response of ease. All of a sudden, the cells and organs of systems of your body work better. You come into coherence of mind and heart. And it begins a new spurt of forebrain growth and development. Now, traditionally, scientists have said that the forebrain is the quiet part of the brain, that they didn't really know why we had a forebrain because it wasn't working, and that people use only something like 27% of their brain power. Well, when you get into this neutral metabolism space, the brain begins to develop. And unlike other aspects of human development, when this kind of development begins to take charge, it doesn't matter how old you are. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can be 90, and if you start coming into a state of neutral metabolism, your brain begins to develop more. The connectors between your right and left part of your brain, the corpus callosum, begins to develop new transmitters and receptors so that the analytical side of your brain works better with the holistic side of your brain. And things start really changing. You become more sensitive to vibration and to frequencies so that you can tell if when you hear a thought, if it's more expansive or it's more contractive. You can get an idea whether this feels better or worse because your sensitivity has increased. And when you're in this place of acceptance and willingness, then you begin to have the metabolism they call tend and befriend. That's the up from fight or flight is tend and befriend. You tend to connect with other communities of people, and you have other rules. And the first one is the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And at that point, you get to the level of 400, which is reason and understanding. You begin to understand other people. You begin to see that they aren't doing what they're doing because they're bad or wrong or evil. They're doing what they're doing because they're living out the consequences of the thought patterns that they have. And if you know better, you do better. And so you begin to have understanding and reason. You begin to look at the world from a more scientific, analytical perspective. And you allow yourself to believe in things like evolution and science so that expansion and the way things can become better and optimistic become much easier to believe. Then you get to love, 500, and unconditional love, 540. And you experience the feelings of caring and respect. And your rule becomes, I want for you what you want for you. And that's what TM's song today was about. It's about, I'm going to love you no matter what. And you can change a whole lot of things in your life, and you will want to, and you will, and you can do anything you want, and I believe in you. But you can't change the way I feel about you. I'm just going to love you no matter what. And I love that about that song and about that consciousness. That is such powerful, beautiful consciousness. And then you get into the mystical levels of consciousness. At 600 peace, and your experience becomes reverence and bliss. You allow yourself to feel that everything is divine. And then your metabolism changes again, and it becomes an endorphin-based metabolism. And endorphins are what make you feel like you're melting into bliss. So sometimes people have that experience in meditation or through being in the physical world and seeing something that just opens their heart at a level they've never experienced before. There's a lot of ways that can happen. And then at the levels of 700 through 1,000, which is Christ or Buddha consciousness, the rule becomes what I do to you, I do to me, because we are one. That makes me cry. But it makes the do unto others as you would have them do unto you a whole nother experience, because you realize that you're not acting out there, that everything you do acts on the inside. So this is such a powerful tool for me, because now I don't have two choices, the filter of love or a filter of fear, filter of grace or a filter of fear that I managed to come up with in my own consciousness through my visions. But I have this whole chart of possibility of the ways I can choose to interact with the world. And I can choose to understand other people's ways of interacting in the world, so that I no longer have to be in judgment, but I can be in acceptance and love for whatever anybody's doing, so that I don't have to change the way I feel about them no matter what they do. And I don't have to stop loving them no matter what they do, even if what they do seems horrendous to me. I can come from a much broader perspective. I can see that life truly is a much bigger picture than I ever thought about. Now, one of the things that Abraham Hicks said that inspired me is, they said, you have to get over the death thing, because otherwise you'll never be able to understand the world. And the way I heard it in meditation was a beautiful line to me, at least, that said, knowing the end of the movie changes the quality of the experience. Life is eternal. And so the end of the movie is the beginning of the movie. There is this cycle of life that continues for everyone. So even in situations where there's genocide and huge numbers of people die, they haven't died. They've recycled. They've transitioned to another state of being. And they've found life at a new level. And so it's helped me not judge things that I used to judge horrendously. I mean, I lived in incredible judgment about the choices people made. And finally, through all of this study, I began to look at the people in my life, particularly my husband Cliff and my dad, who were both soldiers, who were both in the army, who I know both killed people. And they were good men who were doing the best they knew how with everything they'd ever been taught. And I grew up in the 60s where war was an anathema and it was wrong and you didn't do it. But there were these two men in my life who I loved who had done that. And not only done that, but felt honored to do it under the circumstances they did it in. That felt that it was the right thing to do when they made the choice to do it. And so I began looking at war and rethinking the possibilities of well, is war ever a right choice? And I looked at this country and I thought, was it wrong to have a revolutionary war and become independent from England? And I thought, no, in the long run that turned out pretty good. And then I thought, was it wrong to have a civil war and eliminate slavery? And then I thought, you know, maybe that wasn't such a bad choice. And so I don't want to go through all the wars we've had since then, because I'm not sure I'm as clear. History becomes, distant history becomes easier. But at least I began to realize that all of the things I judged weren't wrong, and that maybe there's another way to see things that allows me to keep my heart open even in situations where I would choose to shut down, I would choose to judge. And at one time I was talking to the Beloved, it's part of my first book, and the Beloved said to me, "Where do you see love in a war zone?" And I said, "Okay, I can see a mother brushing her daughter's hair. And I can see a soldier receiving a care package from home. I can see a dedicated doctor taking care of a wounded civilian. I can see a elderly couple saying a prayer with a candle at sunset." And I realized that love is flawless and flows at every frequency. And there are people who've been living in war zones basically their whole lives, and that they still are feeling love. They are still having families and falling in love and having weddings. And that life can be good no matter what the circumstances. And I know I've talked about my friend in Yemen who said to me, talking on the internet through Facebook Messenger, "I can hear the guns and bombs outside, but in here there is a peaceable kingdom." And so that to me is the state of peace, 600 on the Hawkins scale, where despite the conditions, that you can find that place within that remains peaceful. Under all of circumstances, you can know that there is a beauty and a harmony, that the end of the movie is always a happy ending. And even if it looks like the end of the movie is death, then life is eternal. So, if you turn to the other side, you see the very detailed map of human consciousness that shows you the scale in the other direction from the bottom up. And the fascinating thing about this to me is that if you look at the column that says God view and the column that says life view, it says, if you feel guilt, God is vindictive and life is about suffering. If you feel fear, God is punitive and life is frightening. If you feel anger, God is vengeful and life is antagonistic. If you feel courage, God is permitting and life is feasible. If you feel willingness, God is inspiring and life is hopeful. If you feel reason, God is wise and life is meaningful. If you feel joy, God is one and life is complete. If you feel peace, God is all being and life is perfect. And if you feel enlightenment, God is self. And life is. Makes me cry. It's just so beautifully summarized that we have all of these choices. And we can look at God and life as any of these choices. And so what I would like to do in the second half today, as our exercise, is go to the chapter in Power versus Force on the levels of human consciousness. And David Hawkins says if you read that chapter It can raise your consciousness by 40 points just reading that chapter. So I hope that what we can do as a community is take turns reading parts of that chapter and make a recording of it for our website so that we can offer that chapter as a gift to our community. And with the intention of sharing that expansion, because I would like everybody to feel about life the way I feel in this moment, just talking about this gives me that experience of joy that is the indicator of the higher consciousness, the endorphin-based metabolism, the expansion that is, I hate to say it, but relatively easy if you have the tools. And I haven't talked about the second tool, but I'm going to take just a moment to do that, because the second tool is spiritual mind treatment, the form of prayer of science of mind, because Ernest Holmes was a genius, and the first stage of treatment is unification. God is. And the second is unification. I am that. And if you look at the enlightenment level, God is self and life is. And that's what every single spiritual mind treatment you do, no matter what the subject is, if you're treating for health or prosperity or relationship or whatever it is, it's a treatment for the consciousness of oneness. And the beauty of that blows me away. I've been treating for 25 years. And I am just so grateful that I have that tool that daily builds that consciousness of oneness and wholeness and acceptance and love. So we're done. I'm done. And I'm so grateful to have had this opportunity to talk about this. So thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.